Welcome everybody. We are back with number three of our World Cup panel talks, and we've got quite a panel again this time. As you can see in the bottom, we've got Danny Carey from GB, from England. We've got Ben Bishop from Australia. We've got Jeroen Baert, who I will still claim is Dutch, but he himself claims he's Belgium. And we've got Jude Menezes, who a lot of people in the world will claim he's Indian, and he himself will claim that he's New Zealand, and he's a head coach for Japan at the moment. So, welcome all. Those were the quick introductions. Like I told you guys in the pre-show, the best panel talk is the one where I shut up as much as possible and you guys talk. So let's kick off with the first question for all of you. Is what stood out in the quarterfinals that you saw, or if nothing stood out in the quarterfinals, what stood out in the previous games from this World Cup? Danny, let's start with you.
So from the quarterfinals, I think in the two tight games, so the Australia Spain game and the England Germany game, the game is decided really almost by the level of maturity of your team. I remember watching Australia in their game, and I think they were debating whether to take a referral or not. And there was just sort of the level of maturity about that decision, the scoreline, the context, how it happened, and their ability to control their sort of reaction to that event in that moment. And it's little moments like that I see sort of accumulate in really big games that sort of tend to separate those that go on and be successful and those that don't. So, not getting carded at a critical time, using your referrals wisely. The game will ebb and flow and there'll be momentum in it, and how players respond to that in an appropriate way, I think, will sort of in those two big games that I mentioned. In the games that were sort of less of a contest, so the Netherlands Korea one, then that's just comes down to sort of level of preparation and quality of players and quality of tactics. But in the tight ones, it'll come down to maturity of the players, their game sense, off the ball understanding, and making some really good decisions under the pressure of the game.
Jude, New Zealand had quite an upset with when they beat India, but they couldn't repeat that performance. Which was predicted by some as well. They say, okay, New Zealand can only do one big game in a tournament. Do you agree, or what was your assessment of the quarterfinals?
I think it was closer than what most people expected. And in the fourth quarter, New Zealand had two clear-cut far post tip-in options. So, but I think the gamer of India would have taken a lot out of them, because it was a highly charged environment, and they did really well to come back and win it. So I think there would have been a hangover of that game that carried forward. But Belgium were very clinical, not quite at their best yet, but I think they did enough to put New Zealand away.
What stood out for you in the quarterfinals? Sorry.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I wondered what the panel felt. It almost looked like Belgium were trying to score the perfect goal at times. It almost looked like we want to score the perfect goal, rather than actually we've worked into the D now and we're going to play a more commercial game. That was interesting.
Yeah, I think that's the style of Michel, and the difference maybe between Michel and Shane. They're really looking to perfect their game for that next game, and they're not looking straight away to maybe make a difference on the goal sheet. I think they're really confident in who they are and what they stand for and where they want to go. And you also see it with all the players that have been injured in the last few games. They've been rotating very easily, playing with players less. Doquier almost didn't play the last game as well. Again, they're sticking to the processes, making the right steps to really peak at the right moment. And I think that's also the bit of the balance of the work that Michel and Shane and maybe as well Ned, of course, do together to really peak at the right moment.
Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to make a point there on Denny's question. What I took away from that observation was just how well connected they are and how comfortable they are playing with one another. And perhaps it comes across as though they're trying to manufacture the perfect goal. But for me, when I watch their build-up, it's so well connected and so well coordinated. There's such a flow from back to front. And, you know, you get to the circle and Denayer's on the back post ready to pop one in. And it's just such a nice thing to watch of how well they move off the ball to allow such easy movements into the circle. And I don't know if that's kind of what you saw as well, Danny, but for me,
yeah.
When I watched them in the last couple of games, just the connectedness of and the interplay and the off-ball movement of them was really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I was curious because it's difficult to tell from the television coverage, but it looked like New Zealand were even playing zone in deep defense, which I know is something Belgium, I think, used to do or did do. And just some of that understanding how to unpick that, you know, some of the redirect deflection play to people appearing in the gaps in the deep zone defense, and so yeah, it looked very much, and this is no disrespect to New Zealand, it did look very much that New Zealand that Belgium were very much just very comfortable going to play like this. This is how we're going to work the ball, and very confident in their ability to sort of win that game. And to Jude's point, it could have come unstuck late on, right, because they did have those opportunities. That you know, everyone's talking about the two tight games, but that game was also quite interesting from a coaching perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the other thing that stood out for me, sorry, Ernst, I was just going to comment on the two tight games. The thing that stood out for me with those games was just moments of play that actually really changed it, obviously on the goal sheet. But if we look at the Germany-England game, it was 2 minutes. Germany scores two goals. In the Australian-Spain game, it was 7 minutes. Australia scores four goals. And again, to your point of maturity, Danny, that those moments when a team perhaps can feel the momentum shifting is when you need experienced players and leaderful players to really step up and try and arrest that momentum and maybe break the chain of errors that leads to multiple goals or multiple opportunities for the opposition. That for me that was a big one. You know, Spain led, Australia scores four quick goals. England led, Germany scores two quick goals, and obviously changes the whole match.
Yeah, and again, just to add on that, so the crucial goalkeeper position. So the Spain-England game, first half, it felt to me that Spain were on top, had a few corners, a few good goal shot opportunities. England's deep defence, very good, very tight. So the type of shots and saves that Oli Paim making were not easy, but he still made them, right? And then in the second, a couple of chances for England, very commercial, put away really, really well on 2-0, despite almost that first half being Spain dominant. So the goalkeeper and at the other end, the ability to just take those couple of chances that come your way in those tight matches become so fundamental. And if I look to Australia-Germany, my sense is Australia will have the maturity to come through that game, but it will probably come down to those two things, you know, the ability to convert the very few chances that come people's way and some goalkeeping actions.
Ben, what were some moments that stood out for you from those quarterfinals?
Well, those moments that I mentioned before about the goals in quick succession. But if I look to the Australia Spain game, I think the moment that really changed it was the goal right on half time. Flynn Ogilvie scored with 7 seconds left or something like that. Australia down 2-0. And to that point, I think you could say that, you know, Spain probably deserved their lead, and going into a half of a quarter final and you're down 2-0, you know, you perhaps start to doubt things a little bit. And, you know, I think Australia have the experience to maybe not let that derail them. But I certainly think that that goal was a really big moment in the game. 7 seconds to go, a player from Spain who I think is outstanding in Enrique Gonzalez. I think he'll be one of the best in the world in a couple of years, perhaps. But he just missed a marking assignment on Ogilvy in the circle, I think. And you know, that for me, that changed the game, because Australia obviously go into the break with the tails up a little bit and can sniff some more goals, which they certainly did in the first five minutes of the third quarter.
Yeah, no, you're spot on there, Ben, because at the other end, just Spain actually could have gone 3-0 up, and it was off that very the next play that Australia got their first goal, which actually, you're right, actually changed the whole game there. So it's a big difference going into the halftime, 3-0 down and 2-1 down, so big shift.
What stood out for you, Jude, during the quarterfinals? What were the moments that you think were so special?
I think for me, the big moment was the two penalty strokes. One, the Charter saves under pressure, which actually then proves out to be, like, you know, he proved out to be the match winner. And also the momentum shift when Rua misses the stroke against England. And you look at the clock and this is not much time. So I think this game is done. And then they've managed to pull two back. So for me, those moments, and not only the quarterfinals, but some of the earlier games as well. A two-goal lead, as we all know in hockey, is probably the worst lead to have. And all the teams that have had that two-goal lead, or not all, but quite a few of those came up on the wrong side of the equation. So I think the ability for teams to now bounce back late in the game, that was quite fascinating, because you're always in the contest.
We've got a question here from one of the audience members already here, so let me bring that on the screen quickly. Is how did Spain lose? Were they too defensive, Ben?
I don't think so. I mean, you put two on Australia in the first half. I think, you know, that shows an intent and it shows the purpose of Spain. It was 7 minutes, you know, that the score was 4-3, and Australia scored those four goals in 7 minutes. I didn't get the sense they were too defensive, and sometimes that can happen. Which is what I think perhaps happened a little bit with England in their quarterfinal. They maybe could have pushed a little bit harder for that third goal, I wonder. But I'm not sure about Spain. I got the sense that they were there to play. Certainly having four goals in 7 minutes put on you can disrupt the game plan. But I didn't get the sense that they were overtly defensive.
Well, they didn't. In my perspective, they didn't also create a lot. I think Spain, for me, they were very, very efficient in the way that they played in that first part. Didn't create a lot of opportunities, but the ones that they created were super effective, and they really finished it off really well. And then, of course, Australia, when they have momentum and they go for it, and they go and they put them under pressure. And Spain is a young team. I've seen a lot of familiar faces from the last 21 World Cups and European Cups with them, and like Max is been saying, they're really building towards the next step with a lot of young players. And you see straight away when teams like Germany, Australia, Belgium, when they start pushing, it's just really difficult to, when they get a bit of momentum, to stop that momentum. And then, especially with the qualities that Australia that time have, you see they struggle to get momentum again. And I thought it was good that they scored the 4-3 again, and then there was momentum again for Spain to maybe do something.
Danny, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree entirely. I think Spain will definitely be a team to keep a good track on. They have a small number of players in Spain, but they produce fantastically good technicians, skillful players. And I think with Max, you can see definitely the progression. And, you know, even through the group stages, there were periods where I felt they were really good, really strong. I mean, the first half against England was a really good example of that. But just that they're in that part of their development phase where, you know, two or three players are not quite clicking, not quite there, and you lose the momentum and you lose your shape and stuff. But I think Spain, if not come Paris, that might be a little bit too early. Certainly in the next cycle, they keep that group together, then they'll be back in the right direction. So it's been a good rebuild job going on there. Yeah, I'm completely fascinated with the semi-finals coming up. I'm really curious as to both games. My, you know, if we're going to get into putting our money on horses, then I think Australia will tip the Germany game. I think it'll be incredibly tight, could go either way, but I'll probably go Australia just on the level of maturity throughout the team. It's sort of been there, and I think they'll keep their heads when it matters most. Holland versus Belgium, I take your own point around Belgium as sort of just, you know, keeping the big picture in mind, but I wonder if there's a danger at not having to have played, to having not had to play full tilt really yet. And other than, I think, the game they drew, yeah, I wonder if that might work in Holland's favour. Equally, you could argue Holland haven't really had to get out of, into top gear yet either. They've had a really, not easy route, but they've had a better, you know, a good route through. So that game is difficult to call. If you push me, I'll go Belgium, based on just some of the experience of the quality of the players. I think the Dutch team is a bit ahead of Spain in terms of the rebuild, but I still think they've got a bit of a journey to go. And then overall quality of players, I'll go for Belgium.
Let me bring on a question here from one of our Dutch viewers, Bert de Boer from Kampong. He says that Belgium and Australia are slightly more effective with circle entries and shots on goal. And do you think that is going to be decisive, or is it ultimately physical endurance, read age, experience anyway?
I mean, I think the loss of Hendricks could be interesting. I'd no doubt that the likes of Boone and others are reasonably good at corners, but I think the loss of Hendricks might play a factor. In terms of the question on the board, yeah, Australia have a long, rich history of people's ability to convert chances. That in almost the mindset comes first. You know, the intent is there, and then just the clinical expertise in front of the circle, especially the likes of Boone. Converting chances, such a critical moment, especially at the pointy end of tournaments. So the style of entry into the circle and how people get there, I think that's becoming a little bit homogenous now. A lot of teams are doing pretty much working the ball into the circle in the similar ways. So I'm not so sure it's about how they're getting there. I think it's more around some of the technical abilities, and probably more importantly, their intent, particularly sort of Australia. And if you like, someone like Boone is just this absolute intent to be in the right places, make the good time leads, and then the ability to generate shots from, you know, adapt shots out of nothing, I think can be a real defining feature.
Jeroen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Australia is known for their quality inside the circle. Also, you can't underestimate, I think, for example, a Brinkman, who's on fire in the Dutch competition, and I think also for Holland. Koen Beyer, who scored already 5 goals, he's a defensive attacker, but you see as well, he's been in the right spot already for a few times, and I think they can also make that next step. But I think if you just look at the full front lines or attacking players from England, or sorry, from Australia and from Belgium, the quality that they have, the experience they have, that's the reason where they are at. And I'm very curious to see if Germany can bring that as well. Because yes, they have Wellen, who's a fantastic, phenomenal player. Yes, they have a guy like Roux who can make with moments a difference, but also a lot of moments that he's just not showing up. But they're less broader. Holland, I think, is the same. I think they have Brinkman, who's a world-class forward. But then they have a few that are maybe just not there yet. And I think that could be maybe the difference between Australia and Belgium making it to the final and Holland and Germany maybe just not there yet.
Ben, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, in respect of the question, I think if you look at the four semi-finalists, that there's quality in each forward line. So are Belgium and Australia slightly more effective? Perhaps we've got to look at the numbers, but I think if you look at the quality in each group, they all have it. Jeroen said Velen, there's Prince as well from Germany. I think Brinkman and Bayern doing really well for Holland. Van Abel, I think, is just one of the best strikers in the world. He's in my team every day. I think he's doing really well. Australia, Tom Craig's doing well. Blake Govers can score a field goal as well as a corner goal. So there's quality across all of those semi-finalists, I think, in the forward line.
Jude, your thoughts?
It's all been said, but I want to just raise a point about the goalkeepers as well. So they've got to have a big role to play in the East semi-finals, because eventually, most of the times we say that these semi-finals always come down to shootouts and those kind of things. So I think we've got to think if that could be a huge area that would come into play.
Yeah, we've had in the first couple of talks, we've had the suggestion that this World Cup will be won by the team with the best goalie. What do you think, Ben?
Well, naturally, you must have a good goalkeeper. I don't think you can win big events without a very good goalkeeper. I would probably make the point around penalty corners, I think, and the importance of a team, in that penalty corner defense. So goalkeepers clearly very important, but if they've got a PCD number one runner as their running mate, I think if you can put the two of them together, then that becomes a really critical piece to a successful team. And we've seen, the penalty corner success rate perhaps a little bit lower. I'd be interested to know the exact numbers, but it feels like it's a little bit lower than the past. And yes, you can attribute that to the goalkeepers, but gosh, you say the best team's going to have, sorry, the winning team's going to have the best goalkeeper. I think the winning team's going to have the best number one PCD runner as well.
Yeah, I agree totally, Ben. And we actually have been doing a little bit of analysis on that. And usually it used to be one in three, and you're doing really well. It's, I think, dropped down to one. If you do one in five, if you score one in five, I think you're doing very, very well. And at the moment, Hayward sort of got seven and is on fire for Australia. So the other flickers haven't yet, fired. So, and you're dead right. It's a team defense, and the penalty corner defense has just gone to the next level now.
Yeah, but I think now we will see for sure the variations coming up. Okay, Belgium lost Hendricks, but I really believe that Belgium and maybe Australia not, because Hayward is on fire. So they will try to probably try to test out the German goalkeeper today. But I'm pretty sure that Holland and Belgium and also Germany, they will have some things in their sleeve to surprise. Because indeed it's been just very tough, and for me, just looking at how Wijnaldum runs together with the position of Van Aanholt, it's just really hard to beat for the moment. I think in Germany as well, I think one of the first runners is Wellen for Germany. If I see how he ran in the Dutch competition last year, really really difficult to beat because he makes himself so wide. So I think we can see some surprises today, variations on PCA.
In some of the games I've watched with Australia, Hayward, and correct me if I've got this wrong, but Hayward scored off the long castle, or the far castle, and that's, again, I'd need to look at the data, but my sense is that's not normal. Normally, it's off the near castle, and if we look at Hendricks, he traditionally scored off the near castle, and it makes a slightly longer run for the number one runner. The ball is a shorter distance to the trap. It's quicker off the top. There's more of the goal to aim at. Hayward off the far, I think, has just changed the picture for defensive runners and goalkeepers. So that'll be a little game within a game if Australia go to the far with Hayward, you know, have the defenses adapt well for that.
I think Hayward scored from both. I think he also scored from the first one. But Yip Jansen will do the same. He will also move. He will also flick from first and second. I know Hendricks doesn't have that preference. But indeed, that will make it more difficult for runners to get their lines right and also the positions for the goalkeepers.
Yeah. It helps when you have another excellent flicker next to you. You know, Hayward's flicking from two and Blake Govers is on one and the defence is all of a sudden saying, wow, who do we go to? Maybe we've got to pick one. And that if you guess wrong, then Jerry can flick straight down the line. And it makes me wonder about Belgium actually in the semi-final, if that's a loss for them. So, you know, you lose Hendricks from the top. Okay, you've still got some quality in Tom Bone and Cosens and these types of guys. But when you haven't got a pair working together, it can sometimes take the edge off a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Guys, a question for Jeroen. Let me bring it on from Keith from Scotland. Come on, let's bring it on. There we go. Here we go. Then you talked about maturity of players in the decisive moments. And the Belgian squad obviously is the most mature, most experienced squad at the moment. What does that mean for the future? And his follow-up question, Jeroen, is what's the wider plan in Belgium to make sure that the next generation of your top under 21s gets those games under their belt to get that experience?
Oh, a long question. Yes, the difference for the Belgium team now is just that they have so much experience. They have experience playing finals. They have experience winning finals. And at the end, it was a decision that of course Michel, Shane, Ned, and of course Adam as well, they made to keep working a bit longer with this older generation. You see now with Max Van Os, Thibaut Stockbroeks. They made the training group also a bit wider, so there's some juniors training much more with them already during the year. So they're really prepping the next generation to also get to that next level. I think what's a really good point is that last World Cup, I think Belgium was struggling a bit during the pool phases, and then they got the injuries and the sickness of John at that time. And then Meurmans, but especially Antoine Kina came into the tournament, and I think he really made a difference in the last part of that tournament to win the last World Cup. And you just see now already, yes, you have a very wide older group inside the red lines, but you also have Arthur Van Doren, you also have Arthur De Slover, you have Loïc Van Doren in mind, you have Vic Wenier, you have Antoine Kina, Thibaut Stockbroeks is now there as a reserve player. There's a lot of young guys that are getting the experience as well to make the difference, to get at this level, to have the experience to make the right decision at the right time, like Danny was saying, making mistakes, getting cards, using the video referee at the right time. So I think Belgium is doing a really good job in general to slightly make the next steps, but still ensuring to play for the prizes. And I don't know the answers, but I'm curious to see what the choices will be after the World Cup regarding which players will get which opportunities. Yes, Pro League for sure, but maybe also the European Cup. I'm really curious to see towards Paris how they're gonna balance that out. And maybe on the second phase of the question, under 21s are training hard during every month, every year. Preparing them to get to the next level, and we try not to focus too much on the results, but we try to really make the step on okay, what do we need to get them to the next level to become a red line. And I think in the last few years it was very clear it was the physical part that we really had to work on, but now the level is so high, we also really need to focus a bit more on okay, what are we doing at club with these boys, technically wise, decision-making wise, and what can we work on with the national team program as well to make these boys ready so we can make the gap a bit smaller. And of course, in generations, you will have more players ready to play at this level. Look at the generation, De Slover, Kina, Wenier, Van Doren. We had a few boys that were maybe able to play that level pretty quickly. But now I think with Arno van Dessel playing a couple of games in the Pro League, who's a really, really good player as well, I think we will see him for sure in the next few months as well, playing with the Red Lions, and hopefully maybe trying to beat others to win his position inside this team as well.
What I think would be an interesting angle, sorry, Jeroen, what I think would be an interesting angle is Paris and the 8 matches in sort of 13 days. It's the requirement of that Olympic tournament. Or 18-14, 18-13, 16 man squad on a match day. If they keep the same regulations from Tokyo, then they can rotate in. So I think Belgium, even that younger group that is mentioned, they kind of have a lot of miles on the clock already. So they're young, so they have a lot of experience, but physically there's a lot of miles on their car. So keeping those guys fit and healthy so they don't break down through the training and then they're still able to deliver 8 matches in 16 days, in 13 days in Paris, and then potentially some younger players who maybe don't have some of this big tournament exposure. So I think that will be Adam, as the high performance director, that'll be the thing bothering him and keeping him up at night is, okay, you know, we either stick with this older group going all the way through to Paris, or we've got to bring in some young youth and they're not going to have this tournament experience that the current group has. So, you know, these are the great challenges of performance director and national coaches.
Yeah, I think they're really thinking about that puzzle and they're really busy with it. But they also have the fact that they want to win prizes. They want to win World Cups. They want to win European Cups. They want to win Olympic Games. And I've heard Michel talk a few times, and I think with the other coach as well, they need to beat the other players. They need to be better to win their spot. And if the older ones are still physically and mentally and technically better than the younger ones, then that's always the balance they have to look for. And I'm really curious, and I completely agree with you, Danny, but I'm really curious to see how the likes of Thibaut Storbrooks, but also Arno van Dessel, and there's a few more just in behind, Maxime Van Os, who now gets the opportunity to play the last few games in this World Cup, how they will manage in the next couple of months. And I think they're going to really attack the current Red Lions, and that I think will only be beneficiary for their level in the next few months. Let's hope also cup the next years.
Yeah. Ben, your thoughts on that? As a guy who made a lot of the Australian players who are now joined the Kookaburras, how do you do that, the integration of the youth?
Really challenging. And I agree, Jeroen, with what you said. The new players coming through have to show they're better. And they've got to show that they've earned their cap, they've earned their shirt. And, you know, Dene is still playing well, I think. Van Obel's still playing well. Charlier's still playing well. They're still playing well, these guys. And, you know, you have to be overtaken, I think. The one thing I would maybe say that's a bit counter to that is what's the motivation of the older guys? And I think that can be... that can help you make the decision about if they should go on or not. So are they just hanging on to get to the end of Paris? Because if that's the motivation, I'm not sure that's the right attitude for a player to have. You know, if you're just playing to hang on, I've just got to get through these last, you know, seven games in Paris and then I'm done. I think that if that's the mentality, that can be really dangerous to the success of the overall team. And so then it may come down to a difficult decision for the coach to make. You know, what's the motivation? What's the attitude of the players here? Do we need to provide a bit of, youth? It's the old cliche, the balance of the mix of youth and experience, you know? But that's the counter to to the point there that, are they just hanging on? Because if they are, then I'm not sure that's the right mindset.
Can I... Add to that conversation. I think I understand about, you know, proving that they're better. But part of the development journey is playing senior international hockey. And how do they prove they're better? So at some point, as a national head coach, you've got to understand that you've got to give them senior exposure as part of their developmental journey and to be able to prove that they're better. So how you make those decisions, if you're making those decisions based on an environment of Pro League when different teams are doing different things because of different commitments, that's not the environment you're not going to find out there. So proving they're better, I would add you've got to understand there's a bit of a developmental journey, some senior exposure in significant tournament match play, and that's challenging, whilst also fully agreeing with it's a World Cup. You pick your best team, you pick your best players. They don't come along often. So that is that's the real challenge.
Cool. A question maybe from Bert de Boer again from Kampong. Let's start with you, Drew. So in addition to the importance of the penalty corner, it's not the systems only, but spotting the spaces left by the opposition and use this space at the right moment. And then his follow-up question is, which team has the most cognitive adaptation ability, do you reckon? And how do you coach that?
I'll talk to the cognitive ability first. And I think between Belgium and Australia, I think both of them, those two teams, I think are probably the ones with the more cognitive ability. They've had more sort of experience overall. And coming to the penalty corners, yes, it's been touched on. Yes, I think there will be a few more spaces that will be targeted, so the variations may well come into play. Those are basically my thoughts.
Jeroen, how do you coach those that smart player to see those moments, to see those openings?
But I think it's a lot with doing their homework, looking at video from themselves, looking at video from others, understanding of trying to understand why certain decisions are made, and I think that makes it challenging for them to understand. Okay, in these kind of situations, they lean towards making these kind of decisions. So that's why we're trying to train certain stuff. But it's a difficult one, especially at this level. It goes so fast. It's a chess game between masters, because you see as well on the other side, they will also look at video. They will also be busy with certain decision making and video. So it's at this level for sure, it's a difficult thing. But it's doing your homework, looking at the video. Of course, at my club, I work a lot with Pirmen Blaak. And I know he's very diligent in what he does with corners. So he looks everything what he has, he looks at it over and over and over, and tries to set his mind to, okay, I feel that this is the spot that you're going to aim. But also in the back of the mind, in the chess game as well, knowing, okay, I have to be prepared for certain steps that they will maybe make. So it's a lot, not on the field work, but a lot of off the field work, looking at the video and having the conversations with your teammates, with your coaches, to talk about what do you think, this is what I see, etc., etc.
Ben, how do you coach this? How do you train this?
Yeah, well, I think the answer to the question, first of all, is pretty easy. It's Australia and Belgium are the two most cognitive, adaptable teams, I think. How do you coach it? Ernst, we did a talk together a little while ago on how I sort of see this. It's, you know, theoretically, I think there's about 97% of the game where you don't have the ball. And what are you doing in those moments to make a difference? And so I think if you can highlight that to players in the training environment, I think if you can have that in the forefront of their mind about the importance of watching the game and not just watching the ball, but seeing how you can make a difference by how you position yourself, by what sort of attitude you can bring, those types of things. I think that is really key in helping players become smarter. And I think the other side to it is very much what Jeroen said. You know, there's lots of homework to be done, but clearly experience plays a factor here. And when I think about experience, I'm talking about moments when the heat of the game is on, you need someone to make a good decision, whether it's about a referral or whether it's what corner defence are we going to run here against Germany, who've shown the propensity to do swishes in the last, you know, 2 minutes of a game when it's tied. Those types of things, you need players that are really switched on and can put aside the chaos of the game to be able to make a really, you know, calm and measured decision.
Danny, your thoughts. You mentioned in a previous talk that we had as well that one of the big challenges for a coach with youth and with younger players is to get them to love defending and the defensive skills and watching those things. So how do you coach or do you train this smart player?
Your environment, your learning environment has to match the environment in which they're going to compete. And so if you're requiring those players to make really, really good decisions in chaotic, high-pressured moments, if your learning environment doesn't replicate that at the right times and frequently enough, then you're not going to develop those players, or you're just leaving it to tournaments. And then you're probably looking at them having to play multiple Olympic cycles to pick up enough experience. So your learning environment has to replicate it. The defensive thing, yeah, again, you know, you get what you incentivize. So as a coach, if you can find a way that lights the fire of players to really value things, whether that's the quality of decision making, not getting carded at a critical moment, the diligence of defense, if you get what you incentivize, so your ability as a coach create the environment and incentivize the things that are really going to matter in the most mission critical moments in the game, that's how you do it, and you've got to be really clear on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, we're nearing the start of the first semi-final, so let me start rounding this up with the questions I reserve for the end. Danny, you already gave a little bit of an insight. Who do you think is going to be the champion? Why is that team going to be the champion? And also, who do you think is the player to watch?
Is that for me or for everybody? For me. So if I'm really, really pushed on who's going to be world champions, I may go for Australia. They lost out narrowly in Tokyo. I think that fire in the belly will be there. I think there's some maturity. I think they take their chances. I think their defense is still some elements of their defense. I think times needs to be tidying up, but I just have a feeling that, you know, not having quite made the step and the fire in the belly might be the difference. I know that sounds a bit cliched, but it's, yeah, even saying that, I'm thinking, oh, I'm not so sure. But, you know, if I had to be pushed, I'd possibly go Australia. But if it's not Australia, then I think it will be Belgium.
Mm-hmm. Ben, hedging your thoughts, who's going to win it? And who is the player to watch in the semis and the finals?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously two semi-finals, Australia, Germany, Netherlands, Belgium. I think Australia beat Germany. I think if we look at the parts of the game that will make a difference, and this is obviously in both semi-finals, but I think that the kick goalkeeping for Australia, they get the tick. I think the penalty corner attack for Australia, it's close. You know, maybe we haven't seen Payet fire just yet, but with Govers and Haywood, I think that gets a tick as well. So that's in a game where those moments could decide it. I'll take Australia in that semi-final. The Dutch and the Belgian one for me is a little bit closer. I think the easy win, or the easy choice there perhaps, is Belgium, obviously because of their quality and experience, and they've had such a wonderful dynasty, and you know, I've been really excited to watch it, having lived in Belgium and played in Belgium, you know, right at the start of that climb. It's been great to watch. But I do wonder, without Hendricks, without, you know, Van Doren, I'm not sure where Van Doren is at, but he's perhaps not been at his peak fitness throughout this tournament. And, okay, the Dutch haven't been really challenged yet, but you can only play what's in front of you, and they've done a very, very good job of that, I think. I'm gonna take the Dutchies in that semi-final, and then as a bit of a smoky for you, and then I'm going to take Australia in the final. I'm going to take Australia. I like the way, Danny, you put it. And I actually think we saw some of that, you know, fire in the belly, so to speak, in the Spain game. I think it was a really good wake-up for our guys. Down 2-0, and they're really having to fight to get a result in a big game. I think that's given them the appropriate kick in the pants, if you like, to win these next two games. And as for the players, I think Flynn Ogilvie will be an important one for Australia. I think Antoine Kiener will be an important one for Belgium. And Brinkman, I think, has been really good for the Dutch. He's maybe not been in the conversation as one of the best strikers in the world, or if you're picking a World 11, maybe he hasn't been in it. But I think he's really knocking on that door now, and he's making a difference for the Dutch. So, for me, they're the players and the teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, Brinkman's always in the World 11. Absolute major striker for the Dutch. But Jeroen, your thoughts?
Yeah. My thoughts. I think Germany, Australia. I think Australia has so much power, so much quality. They probably learned from last games as well, like Bish was saying. So for me, I think Australia will beat Germany in the semi final. I don't think it's going to be as close in the other one, as maybe because I'm Belgian. I really believe that the Belgians are 10 miles ahead. I coached some of the Dutch boys, and I really believe that they have some quality. But I think Belgium is a couple of miles ahead, even without Hendricks. Defensive block unit that they have, not only with the goalkeeper, but also with the defense and the players around the system that they have in place. I think Belgium will beat the Dutch today. And then the final, Australia-Belgium, and I come back to the defensive part. I think, yes, Australia will have has a lot of power and qualities up front. But Belgium is a fourth. And I really believe that will make a difference in the final as well. I hope to see a fantastic game. And I think we will see a fantastic game. But I think Belgium will be world champion again, just because of the discipline in the back and the qualities in the back that they have. Yes, maybe offensively they're a bit less than Australia at the moment, but still, with the experience, with Flora Nobles and other players, Tom Bone and other players around, they will have their goals as well, and I think they will concede a bit less than the defense of Australia, for example. So that's my pick. Players to watch, maybe a little shout out to David Ames. He's not in the competition anymore, but before we went online, we already spoke a bit about him. He's a guy that's you don't maybe see that much during the television footage, but having coached him, again, seeing how he interacts and intervenes with the English team now, I was super impressed, not only with him, but just with the English way of play. And so unfortunately, it didn't end up in their way a couple of days ago. But I'm really impressed in what the new coach of new coaches has set up in place. I'm not sure what the exact difference is, but I was really, really impressed with the way of play, but especially with David running the defense and middle of the field. Key players to watch in the next couple of games. Yeah, Tom Craig, I think he's a phenomenal player. I think he had a really good start of the tournament. After maybe a bit of a dip, so I hope to see him again today and tomorrow. And for the rest, yeah, I think all teams have their players. And maybe one that hasn't been mentioned yet for Holland is De Geus, Jonas De Geus. Mm-hmm. That's maybe also a bit of a profile player that I really look for and I really like. Jonas is having the best season in Holland for sure, and he was a bit injured in the last few games I heard or I saw. But he can also really make a difference for the Dutch team with the way of play that he brings, the control and the choices that he makes defensively also on the ball. So that's for sure also a player to watch with the Dutch.
Mm-hmm. That's the type of player that we call a linchpin for a team. Huh? He's absolutely a guy who makes a difference. Jude, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to go for an Australia-Belgium final, purely because of the quality of both those teams and the maturity and experience. And I'm going for a Belgian win in the final just because overall, I think Jeroen's mentioned the defense of Belgium, but I also want to mention that the Australian defense has been conceding a few goals in the last, sort of, we watched the last series against India and Adelaide as well. So that, I think, would be a worry, 3 goals against Spain in the quarterfinals. So on that basis, I'm sort of going to go Belgium for the win. And players to watch, I think for Australia, Tom Craig has been fantastic. Ogilvy's he's stepping up now. He's one of the better players in the Australian team. And I'm going to go with Keane for Belgium as the player to watch.
Okay, guys, thanks for your time. Thanks for sharing the knowledge and sharing your insights with us. We're just a couple of minutes ahead of the kickoff for the first semi-final. And as fun as it is talking to all of you about hockey, there's more fun and enjoyment in watching hockey, the real thing. So thanks for all of your time here. Thanks for sharing the knowledge. And let's enjoy the games here. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ernst. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.